Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart. Today, I'm joined by a founder of Practically Speaking. She teaches leadership presence, and she's going to talk to us about how you can show up confidently anywhere. But I'm going to zoom us in on how to show up on sales calls. But these skills are applicable everywhere. Alex Perry, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
I'm really excited to have you on the show. I think as a new salesperson and even as sort of a more experienced rep, this is one of the things that I think I struggled with the most was just showing up confidently on my sales calls when I had to sell to executives. I had this, I'm a new hire. I'm fresh out of college, or I was selling while I was still in college. And so as somebody who's in college trying to sell to CEOs, executives, and I was selling into mining, it's like, how do I deserve their time? How do I, you know, and that all that translated into my calls, and it made me sound very meek. It probably lost me tons of deals. So I'm really excited to brush up on my skills and help share some of this knowledge with, you know, some of our listeners across the spectrum of sort of experienced and brand new to it.
Well, I'm excited to talk about it with you.
So talk to me before we jump in. Can you talk to me about who you typically work with? Because you're not always working with salespeople, are you?
No. My clientele fall within two categories. So I work with professionals anywhere from C-suite all the way down the ranks who want to improve their presence, improve their communications, their soft skills in front of other people. So these are highly driven folks who recognize the need to be effective communicators and to present themselves well and to save their own faces in front of clients. I have a second subset of professionals that I work with, and those are professional speakers. So people who go out and intentionally, you know, they are doing presentations, they are the folks that want to do TED Talks, they are keynoters. All of those folks as well are part of my clientele base.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. And so we're taking all the practical tips from that you usually deliver to the pros and sort of sharing it with all of us today, which I'm really excited about.
Absolutely.
So how do you get into even working on speech and teaching people how to TED Talk? Because I don't imagine there's like a course in university where it's like, teach people how to TED Talk 101, 102, et cetera.
And no. So I got into this in the most roundabout, awkward sorts of ways. I say I'm the world's most unlikely entrepreneur. So I started off in speech language pathology. I spent almost 17 years of my career working with people who lost their ability or never had the ability to speak in the first place. So this gift that you and I have, this thing that makes us both nervous when we get in front of a camera and we're like, oh my gosh, I don't know what I'm going to say. I think about, oh my gosh, we don't recognize the gift that we have. So I made the career transition almost 5 years ago. I was looking around for opportunities of how could I use what I know about how speech and language develop and what makes great speech and language and confident speaking language. How could I take that and turn it into something different? And I stumbled upon the world of corporate speech language pathology. And I ended up finding a firm in Carmel. I say I'm the product of a Google search. You can, in fact, like I found my destiny on Google. It's fine. So I went out and I looked and I found a firm that was doing this type of work. And I went out and I worked with her and I applied for the job. I got it, did this work for a couple of years, realized that I wanted to take it a different route. And so I launched Practically Speaking almost 2.5 years ago and have been at it ever since. So have a big spot for sales and what sales takes, because if you're going to do what I do, you have to be willing to sell all day, every day to everyone.
Totally. Welcome to the club.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I don't think there's any admissions panel or committee, although I used to think there was, or at least to be afraid there was, into the entrepreneurs club. It's like, no, you just do it.
And
it,
you just start doing stuff.
Totally.
Yeah.
And so you're not just working on the what we say of presentations. It's more about the how we say it.
Mm-hmm. It's how we say it, how we carry ourselves, the content, all of the pieces. So I have a framework for that I teach folks.
And so can you walk us through, like, what does that framework look like?
So when I am talking about presence, I'm talking about the whole sum of our soft skill ability. I talk about it like a three-legged stool. So there are three pieces to how we present ourselves to the world. So we have our style, we have our story, and we have our standards. And those three pieces, if you're going to have a steady stool, if you're going to have folks look at you and say, yeah, this person's got their stuff together, you need all three of those pieces to work together in tandem.
So style, story, and standards.
Correct.
And so, and it's all three are basically, they're holding up the stool. If you're, if you're, you've got a good story and you've got good standards, but no style, you're basically, the stool's going to fall over, or any one of those three, any one of the three possible combinations.
Yes. So I like to give people the example of, we could play this game together for a second. If I said to you, think of someone in popular culture that's all style, lacks some story and lacks some standards, or lacks a lot of standards, who are you thinking of?
My mind's blank. I don't, I'm pop culture, all style.
Pop culture, all style, no standards.
I'm not really good at this. Can you give me an answer?
So the answer,
can I phone a friend?
Yes, you can phone a friend. So split to friend.
Can I do a, I'd like to 50-50 on this one.
Yes. Are we talking about, usually the response I get almost every audience right now are the Kardashians.
Okay.
So lots and lots of style, maybe lacking some story and lacking some standards based on your own personal opinion, but that universally comes out. If I say someone who's got really great standards, really great story, but lacks a little style, I hear answers everywhere from, oh, maybe Steve Jobs or Albert Einstein. It's in the eye of the beholder, of course, but you know. And the other question that you can answer only in your head is, think about somebody in your office. You probably got somebody that's, or you could say, oh, they could use a little work here. Or, oh, they could use a little work here. Oh, they need some help here. Or they've really got this part dialed in. Like, I've got this friend who's got, she's got this amazing style. She's got a great story. She's got good standards. That's an awesome person.
Right on. So, like, because I want to get in some sort of examples, and I want to get in some tactical pieces here. So why don't we start with, let's start with style. Because we're not just talking about the clothes that we wear and sort of what we look like here, are we?
No, although that's part of it. So when I talk about style with people, and why I love starting with this piece and thinking about, especially thinking about your audience, this is the place where you can get the most bang for your buck quickly. Hmm. So some of these things take very, very little time. So I'm talking about, yes, how you dress. I'm talking about how you use your words. I'm talking about your tone of voice, your body language, and your facial expressions. All of those pieces make up your personal style. And so there's lots of fun tweaks and things that people can do to automatically change how they're perceived by other people.
Okay, so let's start with the easiest ones then. Like, what's the lowest cost, highest impact when we're talking about style? It sounds like clothing actually is one of those pieces.
Clothing is, but I would say even before that is your body language. How are you holding yourself? So let me give you, you can tell immediately when you walk in and you look at a person by how they're sitting, by how they're holding their head. In general, how are they feeling in that moment? Are you familiar with Amy Cuddy and her research?
No, I'm not.
Amy Cuddy, C-U-D-D-Y. She's got a masterful TED Talk.
Oh, is she the power posing person?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Gotcha. So yeah, yeah.
Yep. So she's subsequently written a book all on presence, and she talks a lot about how we hold ourselves in day-to-day interactions. And again, I'm going to flip and think about your audience here for your second, or like the people that are on these sales calls. You think about how they're postured all day long. So are you slumped over your desk? Are you slumped over your phone? Are you holding yourself in what is considered to be a low power pose, a pose that makes you small? Mm-hmm. So are you spending your time there? Or are you spending your time sitting up tall? Is your phone put away? She talks about the very real effect of the eye pose, that most of us are now spending our time looking down and turning our shoulders in, which is not a confident pose, and then therefore affects you physiologically. So when you go to make that next sales call, or you go to get in front of that executive, you don't feel as powerful as you could if you had spent your time doing something else, like sitting up straight.
Which is so interesting because it's so easy to think, and I remember thinking this in the early days, my posture can't have anything to do with it. Can't have anything because they can't see me, right? Mm. I'm running through cold calls, sitting over, I'm slumped, my feet are up, maybe they're not up, maybe I'm like nervous and I'm staring down at this phone book because that's when I started cold calling, was when people actually hand you a business phone book.
Yes.
Yeah. And I never would have guessed. I know some of this now, but I never would have guessed that how you're sitting and your posture would actually impact the way that you're coming across on the phone.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, think about it too, from a structural standpoint. So if I'm bent over, like talking like this, my voice is not going to be as strong because I'm squishing my diaphragm. Your diaphragm's that big muscle that sits right underneath your lungs, right? Mm-hmm. So my voice may not be as strong. It may not be as powerful. I can't get as good breath in. So then I'm talking all week like this and I can't do what I need to do. If I sit up, I can get a much better breath and have a much more commanding voice, even if I don't feel like it.
It's a whole lot easier.
It's a whole lot easier.
Mm-hmm. It's funny.
A whole lot easier.
It's a combination of the sort of the voice and the energy is why I started standing. I'm in a standing desk now. And I had Steli FD from Close.io on the show. And he came on and he was just so high energy. And I remember watching my episode going like, man, he's so high energy. And I'm slumped over my chair and I'm leaning like this for some of it. And it was a great episode. I really enjoyed it, but I look like I'm bored.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, like, you look like you don't care. And so since then, we had a couple empty kegs at the office and I put the keg up IKEA table. Then I had a standing desk.
Brilliant.
Make do with what you have, right?
Absolutely. That's the best part of all of this is that so many of these things require very little financial investment. It's personal investment. It's a little bit of time. It's a little bit of forethought. But from a dollars and cents perspective, these are easy fixes for folks. Easy.
I'd almost argue that like changing the clothes for them, like if you're within a comfortable sort of salary range, changing the clothes would be an easier piece and lower cost, lower investment because it's something you can buy and it requires no mental cognitive load to make that change.
Can I push back on you and say that depends on whether or not you're a man or a woman? Because cognitive load for a woman and clothes, it depends on who you are and how you operate. So I would push back a little on the clothes being the easier piece. They are more they are quick fix.
Okay, so for sure for men, because I obviously don't dress. I have two boys. I'm a man myself. I only like I put shoes on and I'm in like jeans, and then I pick like shirts that hopefully go together.
So you have a uniform.
That's my like level of cognitive load that goes into it. So yes, I can only speak for myself here.
Yeah. Clothes are an easy fix. The easiest fix that I say with clothes is dress for the person that you're there to serve. So even if you're on a call, who are you serving? Who are you talking to? And what's the appropriate level of dress? I recognize that people say, oh, you know, I can do this in my pajama pants and I can do that. But do you really feel at your best if you're in your pajama pants and a sweatshirt?
100% no.
I mean, do you feel your best? And so I think about, man, if you want to get to the level of being the best, you better show up. You better show up, even if you're sitting in front of a computer screen and nobody sees your face. You are going to feel that difference. You feel the difference if you take a shower in the morning or not. You just do.
I was just going to say I work from home occasionally. It used to be a whole lot more, and I've noticed a huge difference that I'm way more productive in the office, and I couldn't figure out why it is. And it's because I run to the office, not every day, but you know, I can get a good 10K run in, come in, have a shower, and I'm awake and I'm alive. Whereas if you do the roll out of bed, get to the office as soon as you can, it takes my brain, you know, an hour to come online. So should I invest in the running to the office or should I invest in, you know, but you're totally right. It's the shower, wake yourself up, get ready, get dressed, make sure you're feeling comfortable in your clothing and then move on. And I don't want to stick on clothes for the whole episode.
No.
So style, it's basically the clothing piece. There is sort of dressing to at the level of the person you're trying to communicate or who you,
yes,
the person that you're there to serve is the words I was looking for.
Yes.
And then the, so, go ahead. Oh,
yep. Dress who you want to serve. Dress appropriately for that. Hold yourself with confidence. Sit up straight. Try not to fidget so much. I always say, know what your tells are. If you don't know what your tells are, so what are the things that you do when you're typically nervous? Are you the pen clicker? Are you the glasses twitcher? Are you the person that's fiddling with your thumbs? Like, know those tells and find a compensatory strategy or something to do other than that. Move the pencil, take the glasses off, whatever it is that you do. And then the next pieces that really make a difference for folks are the words that come out of your mouth and the tone that you use when you're speaking. So I don't know if there's one of those that you'd like to unpack, but...
Yeah. I mean, because words, changing the words seems like that'd be a huge investment to make if I'm going to change my whole vocabulary.
So it's where I start with people is identify what words are not serving you well. So words that are weak words, your filler words, and your qualifier words. So if you can start with those, so start with the elimination process versus I've got to change my entire vocabulary. Just look at what are you doing that's not serving you very well. If you say sorry every third phrase, oh, sorry about that. It's almost a habit. It's almost a filler word. Oops.
Yeah. You might be Canadian.
You might, or American, right? I say Midwestern. It's that we can't walk past each other without saying sorry. And we didn't even, nothing even happened. You're just like, oh, sorry.
Hey, yeah.
Don't apologize for being in the room. That's not necessary. And so looking at those words first, that's okay. Where I usually start with people in terms of their words. And then also a really easy fix is how positive are you? Are you talking to yourself positively? Because if you're not talking to yourself positively, you're certainly not going to be talking positively to the people that are in front of you. Or on that call.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I was listening to somebody else. It was either an audiobook or a podcast. And the person said, I think it's the audiobook I'm listening to. I want to say it's Brené Brown, Daring Greatly. Mm,
yeah.
And she was talking about, it was another podcast guest recommended it. And so I picked it up. And basically she said that the people that are the meanest, that say the meanest things about other people's appearances are actually the most unhappy with their own appearances.
100% true.
And I'm sure I'm butchering exact, like that's not the rough quote, but that's sort of the general idea. And so what you're saying is your own internal self-talk is actually having a dramatic impact on how you communicate and relate to others.
Yes. So negative self-talk turns into negative talk, and negative talk is contagious. You know this in an office setting. If everyone around you is, you know, like Cy Wakeman calls it the BMWs, right? Bitching, moaning, and whining. Like if everybody's got that, that tends to spread. So you've got to start with yourself first. And how are you talking to you? And then that's going to color and change how you're talking to other people.
Gotcha. Yeah, we don't have any BMWs at the office, but we do have a Mercedes, but she's quite nice though.
Well, she's super nice. she's not running around complaining about everything.
Yeah, exactly. So it's staying away from the negative self-talk. And then you'd mentioned sort of tone, right? Because this has obviously got to work well with getting rid of some of the qualifiers and some of the negative language. So how does tone sort of have an impact here?
So tone, first of all, most people don't even take the time to recognize what their own tone is. They don't want to listen to themselves because it makes them uncomfortable. So,
listening to this podcast, that was like, that was climbing a mountain for me initially.
Yes.
This guy sounds like an idiot. Why would anybody want to listen to this? Was like, that's what was going through my head. I've gotten used to it now. It's still weird. It's still weird because I do listen to my own podcasts because the guests are amazing, but it's listening to yourself. It's just strange. I don't hate it anymore.
Do you know why it's strange?
Yeah, enlighten me. I've got some guesses, but.
Well, so from an anatomical standpoint, do you know why it's strange?
Is it because we don't hear through our ears, we hear through
bone, yeah.
Through the bone?
Through bone conduction. So what everyone else hears is exactly what you hear on a recording. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh my gosh, That's not really how I sound, is it? But that's what everyone else hears. So yeah, bones in your head is how you're hearing the sound. Everyone else hears through air.
Which is why I always think I'm so much, my voice is so much lower when actually it's like a pitch higher.
So, and the only way to get better at tolerating the sound of your own voice is to listen to it. There's, I think you got to gun through that. And how I help people with that particular piece, that particular process, is really start listening to, number one, does my tone convey what I want it to convey? And most of the time in sales, you want to be optimistic, you want to be upbeat, you want to be positive, helpful, guiding someone through the problem. So that's the first question you're going to ask yourself. The second thing you're going to ask yourself, am I emphasizing the right things when I speak? So intonation pattern. You want to become really good at intonation. Read Dr. Seuss out loud to small children. Like, they'll tell you really quickly if you're interesting to listen to or not, because they'll shut you down pretty fast. But are you emphasizing the words that you want people to remember? So if I'm talking to you and I really want you to remember a particular word, I'm going to put emphasis on that. So right there, just put emphasis on that word, because I want you to remember that I'm saying the word emphasis. So I give it a little bit of a kick. You can do this. You can take your scripts, whatever you have, and you pick out the most important words. The things that people do that don't help them in terms of tone and inflection is they pick out, like, they'll emphasize funny words. You've heard somebody on the radio talk about, like, you can buy such and such, you know, in Fisher's and Carmel. Well, they emphasized what word there?
And Carmel.
Right? But you really want them remembering both. So you went Fisher's and Carmel. You need to punch both of them, because and is an irrelevant word. We don't need the and so much. We need those two key pieces. So your tone really matters, and your intonation, how you hit those words matters too.
It's interesting. As you're describing this, it's almost like the difference between sort of when you're, if you've ever looked at sheet music, right? Mm-hmm. It's the difference of knowing the words and actually being able to see the words and see the notes outlined underneath them.
Yes. That's a great analogy. Well done.
I can't sing at all.
I won't ask you.
This is not a part of the show. It's like, I got a mic in front of me, but I'm going to talk. I'm not going to sing, I promise.
Hey, I got to switch off here for just a second. Yeah. I want to give you enough pause and leeway to do it. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Hey, Veronica. Hey, Gabby. We're just going to make sure we cut this here. Hello. I like to do the big wave to make
the big wave. Don't put this part. Can you hear me okay? And is the sound okay?
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds good.
Okay. I had to switch. That was my bad.
You're just running
low battery.
Okay.
Low battery.
Just had to plug in?
Yeah. I had to power up.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Womp.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. We're good. And, I need to get one of those like director's things.
Yeah, you do.
I've got one from Universal Studios from when I was a kid.
There you go.
I'm sure it's buried. So Veronica, Gabby, we're going to cut it back right around here-ish. Perfect. And so we were talking about sort of the musical notes and the inflection and that being the analogy there and me promising not to sing. And we're going to cut in somewhere around here. And so on that, continuing that promise not to sing, we'll kind of bring it back to the sort of the inflection and the sort of style in your voice. And so aside from Dr. Seuss, what are some other ways, if you don't have young children, what are some other ways that you can work on those inflection points?
So again, I would go back to, I do like natural practice. So where are the points in your life where it makes sense for you to be paying attention to what your voice is doing? So number one, for your folks, they're on sales calls all day long. So taking a look at the script that you have written and marking where are the points that I need to emphasize. So use a highlighter, use a circle. I have clients that use an arrow up and arrow down, but mark something on that paper so you know you need to be changing your voice. Other great places to do it, your voicemail message. I have people listen to their voicemail message all the time. What does it say? Does it sound like you? Does it sound upbeat? Does it sound the way you intend? So paying attention there. You have an opportunity to practice tone every time you're around anybody that you like, anybody that you care about. So at home with your family, with your friends, those are opportunities for paying attention to, did that sound the way I intended it to sound? Did it come off the way I intended it to? And if you don't know, ask. Mm-hmm. Ask somebody. Like, does my tone sound the way, do I sound excited? Do I sound bored? Do I sound,
engaged?
Engaged. Yeah. Excited. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Because so much of what we're doing is that active listening. And in a perfect world on a sales call, you're doing considerably less talking than, I was going to say your opponent, but it's not your opponent. It's than the prospect or your customer.
Yes.
And so what we need what we say to have such a huge impact. I almost would recommend not starting on thinking about these things on sales calls, start practicing them off of sales calls, because you need sort of, you need to get to from that. Like if you think about the stages of learning, you want to get from like consciously incompetent to like consciously competent before you start bringing this into sales calls. Because otherwise then you're thinking, okay, about my voice and not about the customer, in which case, and then you can sort of, that's when you start missing things. But I love the idea of, you know, when you're talking with people that you know, and then you can have those do-overs. If it's a customer that you talk to all the time, you can say, hey, did that sound natural? I'm trying to work on my speech. Am I sounding like I'm an intelligent person, or am I one of those people that's putting emphasis on the wrong syllables and I'm just like really annoying people? Because there's some people that overdo this, and then they come off as, it doesn't come off as authentic. It feels too almost engineered.
Yes. You know, rehearsed or over practiced.
Yeah. So how do you maintain that balance?
That's a good question. You're going to hit that critical mass that when you do something, right? So you tend to over practice or overcompensate for it because you're learning it. Mm-hmm. So you're looking, engaging at other people's reactions to you. So if you, and I would also say, if you feel like you're overdoing it, chances are you are in fact overdoing it. So if your gut says, wow, I felt like super duper crazy wild. Number one, do you have a recording to prove it? Can you look at it and judge yourself and say, yes, I did. And then if your gut says this doesn't feel real or genuine to who I am, then you're probably right. You should trust that.
That's fair. And I guess this is, if you are doing this live on sales calls, this is where you can like that call review with a manager or even a peer can come in handy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Something like chorus.io or AI, chorus.ai, and it like, or Gong or any of the others, Exec Vision. And they'll come in, they'll record your Zoom calls. And then you can basically just jump and listen to yourself and say, cause you can see the talk patterns and say, okay, how did I sound here? Okay, well, and let's see how that impacted them. Did they buy? And the best part about being on video is you can actually see their body language, which is so important.
Yes. Well, I'm thinking about, so you talked about active listening and were my responses empathetic? Did I sound like somebody who was truly feeling somebody else's pain or discomfort when they expressed that pain or discomfort, or did I just march right along with whatever my talk track was?
100%. I mean, that's such an easy piece to miss. And I see a lot of new reps. It's one of the hardest initial sort of skills to grasp when you're trying to figure things out, because you're learning about the company, you're learning about the product, you're learning about the role. You're trying to figure out, is sales even something I want to do? I went to college for something else because nobody has a sales course, you know? And then it's moving away from the script and moving into that sort of, I don't know, getting into the zone of the call where you're kind of ducking and weaving and you're participating as opposed to just listening to a call and parroting back what you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so can we dive in on this a little bit? Because I think this is one of the most important things that sort of salespeople do in general is that sort of active listening and empathizing and, you know, and interacting with the customer here. And so how can we use our style to sort of build that relationship or get a layer deeper in the conversation?
I think it's maybe less about using your own style. So knowing your own style comes first, but starting to pay attention to what that other person's style is.
Hmm. Yeah.
So how are they communicating? So when we think about, if I'm listening to that other person, what type of words are they using? Where, like, what is their body language? And you may not be able to hear it or see them on a call, right? Depends on the call. But what is their body language telling me? Can I detect subtle changes in their tone that tell me, okay, this is a pain point, or I have pushed too far. They're getting a little bit uncomfortable. They want, you know, I need to shift or pivot the conversation a different way. Or, oh my gosh, they're really interested. And now I'm going to plug in, like, here's something you might be interested in, or here's another tidbit or fact. So I would almost take it from that. The next step is in from active listening to actively listening to what kind of style does this person use, and how do I mirror and match that style?
Gotcha. If we bring it back to the musical analogy, it's almost like you're soloing together, and you want to make sure that you're, when you're trading solos, that you're matching the style, you're sort of parroting back, right? So like they play a little riff, you kind of mimic that riff. And that's how you kind of achieve that resonance, is like, oh, this sounds like one cohesive call, as opposed to them and their style on their side of the table. And then us on the other side with our style, just we're playing sort of two different songs, right? We want to be, what I'm hearing is we want to be working towards playing one song. And so we want to mimic their style, or not mimic their style, but sort of, is that the right, like, is that what we're saying? Is sort of,
I like mirroring better than mimicking.
That's fair.
Just, I'm reflecting back to you.
Using your if they're using sort of gestures, sort of mirroring that slow, like if they talk slow, mirroring that body language can be similar. Those are the kind of things we're talking about here.
Yes. Yes. And we're hardwired for that. So you probably know this, but maybe people listening don't, but I think we have mirror neurons. So neurons that are in our brain that are designed to look for and imitate the person's face that's in front of us. You know this, I mean, you have toddlers, you have twin toddler boys. So you know this, if you hold a baby long enough, and that baby smiles at you long enough, eventually you're going to smile. And then you have that connection. So we can use those mirror neurons to say, I'm creating connection with you because I'm deferring to your style, which is gonna make you feel more comfortable. And that's my goal as a salesperson, is that you are comfortable.
I like it. I mean, also, if you're holding a baby and it's smiling and you're not smiling, like, that's impossible.
It is impossible. Right? Your brain is hardwired for that. Eventually, that baby will get you. They do not care.
So if we take it up a couple levels and out of the, let's put the baby down back in the crib for a second. If we sort of wrap up talking about style, what are the top kind of things that people fuck up when they're not paying attention to their style? Where are the biggest fuck ups?
Biggest fuck ups with style. I would say not being mindful of your words and their impact on other people. We hear a lot that our words, the words you use are irrelevant. That's not true. You know this, because if I ask you right now to think about what's the worst thing that's ever been said to you, you can recall that, like you're going to get that really, really fast. So not paying attention to the words that we use is a big area that people goof up, especially as a salesperson. I think about using too much self-deprecating language, too much that downplays our strengths and our abilities, especially so somebody new, like, oh, well, I'm really new. That you got the job, you're here, you're doing the job, right? I see a lot of people kill themselves with how they sound. So we talked about this a little bit before, but talking about up-talking and the prevalence of up-talking and how that is making us sound very unsure of who we are and what we're doing. So if I'm like, Colin, I'm really unsure about who I am and what I'm doing, and everything sounds like a question when it's really not, I call that a fuck up. Now, will I tell you that people do it sometimes? Sure. Do I, it's contagious. So if you hear it around the office, now that I've heard it, you'll probably hear lots of other people doing it, and it's not serving us well. So I think that's a big mistake. I think the fillers, overuse of fillers and qualifiers and over-talking are some of the biggest things that I see.
Gotcha. With the up-talking, what's your, like, how do you remedy that?
First, it starts with awareness. Most people aren't aware that they're doing it. And then the way that I suggest that people start to work on it is, as soon as you catch yourself doing it, you go back and repeat the phrase and you do it with your intonation ending on a down note unless it's a question. So if I'm going to say Colin, I don't know how to fix that. I'm going to immediately go back and say, Colin, I don't know how to fix that. People are really forgiving with repetition and conversation. We are afraid to do it because we don't want to feel dumb or make the other person feel like we're talking down to them. Mm-hmm. It's a really quick fix and it triggers you. It takes just a few times. So that's one way. The other way is if you work in an office with lots of people and you have somebody that you're really close to, is to have them signal to you when you're doing it, go back and repeat it. So if you don't hear it, have somebody that's willing to kick you under the table so you sound better.
I'd recommend a Nerf gun. Way more fun that way.
I mean, it depends on the culture of your office. Toastmasters, some of the Toastmasters groups where they throw stuff at you if you use an
I used to have post-it note that said on my monitor for the longest time.
Yeah. My rule is that we use them. We use fillers. We use qualifiers. It's, if I can tally count it, it's a problem. If you use an every now and again, fine. But if I can tally count it, then we need to probably address it. We need to address it.
Perfect. And so that's sort of the style. It's really about sort of, it starts with what we look like, because that's what everybody sees first. Then it moves into, it's our posture. It's the body language that we have and the internal self-talk we have ourselves. And then it gets into sort of the words that we're using and how we're delivering that. Is that a fair summation of our style?
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Not at all what I was thinking. I don't know when you said style initially, when we had our pre-interview, I was thinking like, oh, like wear a suit and drive a sports car. I was like, I don't know. I was like, okay. Sure. But you didn't say any of that. Those are just the sort of, the words that are like the image that came to mind. And I'm like, I know it's deeper than this. So I'm glad we kind of were able to get there.
Well, can we touch on that for a second? Because I think it's really important for people to identify what is your style. I think we play a lot of this game of we look at somebody else's style and try to adopt their style or know what yours is. If you are not this, like I always tell people, I'm a minivan driving mom and I eat Cheetos. That's part of my style.
Right on.
If you can't handle that, you probably can't hang with me. And I can also, like, that can go on the back burner if I need to get in front of a client, but you need to know who you are and what sorts of things help bring out the best in you. But that whole compare, I've got to mimic somebody else's style, I don't think is helpful to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Got to figure out your own.
That's totally fair. My style used to be whatever I ran to the office in. And we needed some adjustments of my style needed some adjustments. I found myself sitting there in my triathlon gear too frequently being like, you know what? I probably shouldn't be walking around the office like this. I need to, you know, buy real clothes and shirts and things that aren't wrinkled. So
yeah,
sometimes you need to like, I needed to like adopt somebody else's style in order to sort of figure out how to make it my own. Cause I certainly wasn't going to wear a suit to the office.
Yeah. Well, and you're in an office. So who are the people in my office that I'm serving? Right. Mm-hmm. Triathlon gear works really great for you, but maybe not so much for the friends around you.
That's fair. And so speaking of sort of oversharing just a little bit there, can we talk about story and great segues?
Yes, let's do it.
So the next leg to the stool is story. And so is this the story I tell others? Is this the story I tell myself? Like what is it? Where does it come from?
So when I refer to story and I'm talking specifically about leadership presence, I am talking about your personal story. I'm talking about knowing your story for two reasons. Number one, because if you don't know your own story, you're going to have a really difficult time finding ways to connect and create empathy with other people. Because you've got to know yourself well enough to be able to see yourself in somebody else. And then knowing your own story as a means to, I work with a lot of leaders who struggle to create real and genuine connection with other people. So how do I identify parts of my story that I can share that I'm comfortable sharing with other people that will help me become the kind of leader that people want to follow and not just follow because they have to?
Gotcha. Okay. So I think I follow you there, but I'm curious in terms of what, like, can you help me understand what your story looks like? Is that sort of the story of how I got here? Is that the story of my life from birth all the way to today? Is that my elevator pitch? Like what version or what sort of help me figure out what length?
Narrow down scope of story.
Yeah.
So you need to know your story in its entirety. And then you need to know the segments of your story that you pull out for particular instances. So i.e. the story of how I got here is super important. If I'm on a podcast and somebody says, well, how did you get from speech pathologist to public speaker trainer? Mm-hmm. I need to know that story really well. You can have the story / pitch of your business. That is a piece of story. When I look at story, I look at all of those components as a means to, what do you need? Like, what do you need to use it for? So I didn't explain that very well, did I? Should I rephrase that?
Yeah. Let me see if I grok it. Cause it's okay. One of those, like, even in our pre-interview, I was like, okay, I understand what you're saying, but I'm still like, I want to make sure I get it right.
Yep.
So when I think of a story, I think of like a book, and I'm thinking of like all the individual stories or individual, I think you said moments that had an impact on your life. Those are the chapters.
Yep.
And then the story is basically the collection of those chapters. And then for each sort of those moments, we need to have like a specifically rehearsed way that we tell that story so that we're not making it up on the spot and we're not, you know, we're on brand, at least for our own personal brand. Am I getting it? Am I right? Am I wrong?
You're getting it. And I would say the only piece I would change is that you don't necessarily have to have a rehearsed piece for each one. You need to look at each chapter and say, does this chapter make sense to use with someone else? Because you're going to have chapters in your story that you're like, you know what? That's for me and for my people and not something that I'm going to use in my work every day. So there's a misconception around story and leadership and vulnerability that says I should let all of my stuff hang out into the world. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's necessarily true. There are chapters in your story that you're like, I haven't processed that yet. So I don't need to be sharing that with the rest of the universe in a vain attempt to get connection with you quickly. So it's I know all the chapters and I'm able to select which chapter makes sense to share with somebody in this moment.
Gotcha. And so it's almost like understanding. So you understand all the different pieces that kind of go into it. And then you figure out, okay, these are the chapters and this is the sort of, this is like the tag, this is the category of the chapter and then the parental rating or the work, you know, a situation appropriateness level.
Like
this one I'll only share when I'm drunk. This one is appropriate to share at the office. You know, you've got various ratings from like kid friendly, not kid friendly, work friendly, not work friendly kind of idea.
Yeah. Yes. I would say,
go ahead.
What's a great story that I can use when I know that I need to motivate someone? What's a story that I can use when I know I need to inspire someone? And oftentimes you're not necessarily even the star of that particular story. You might just be in you're in the chapter, but somebody else is running the show. Someone else is the reason you're along for the ride and you're telling it through your eyes.
Gotcha. And so how do we, like, if story is so important and it's a collection of your sort of life moments, how can we make improvements to it? These moments have already come to pass and we're not going to rehearse them. So like how is it that we can have an impact on our story?
Well, the first thing you need to do is be aware that you have them. I would question that many people look at the sum total of their life and they think, I don't really have I don't have that many great stories to share. So the first question you're going to ask yourself are, what stories do I have? What is in my bank? What is in my repertoire that might be impactful to someone else? So if you're sitting with a newbie salesperson, you're going to look back at your newbie salesperson experience and you're going to pick out that really weird and awkward story about that time that you were on a call. And you're gonna be like, hey, I remember that one time when I was on a call and here's how I mucked this up 7 ways to Sunday. And here's what I was thinking and here's what I would do differently. And yes, I've been there before. Huge credibility as a leader. and here's what I would do differently next time. And now you can use that and you're going to be much better and much faster and much stronger than I was when I was in your shoes.
And so the story isn't necessarily something that we are taking the time to write out the table of contents and trying to figure out all of the stories ahead of time, but it's being able to pull, understanding that we do have a story and being able to pull examples from our life that will help influence and help sort of motivate people.
Mm-hmm. I would challenge people though, that it does benefit to spend a little time thinking about when were those moments in my life? Like what were those impactful of my moments in my life? Mm-hmm. So not scripting them out from it. Like we think story and we think, oh my gosh, I got to get up and give a TED talk. For most people, that's not within the realm. I do that kind of storytelling, but that's not what I'm going to talk to a leader like you about. I'm going to talk to you about, all right, what's in your story bank? What's missing from your story bank? How can we beef that up? And then when can you use it? So there is validity in sitting down and saying, all right, here are some impactful moments in my life that I could use to share with other people that would make a difference.
Hmm. Okay. And so you've got, it's almost like there's sort of two layers. It's these are the high impact ones that are mm-hmm. like the big ones. Then there's the little ones like the situationally that are going to come up when you're listening to a rep struggle with a specific type of call, a specific type of customer. It's like, oh, I remember when. Those are kind of the sort of mini chapters.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And so what are some ways that, so if some ways that people can develop are to sort of think of those big moments. And then I guess first you got to start with remembering or believing that you have a story worth sharing. Then second is sort of taking a major story inventory. What are some other ways they can help develop that story and develop sort of sharing appropriately the right stories?
So other ways you can develop stories, I always say mind the people that you have in your life who can tell you moments where you impacted or changed or help you recall important and significant moments. The other thing you can do is use a really simple framework. This, I believe, is Kurt Vonnegut's framework, but it's you draw on a piece of paper. You're like, status quo, my life. Like, when was my life status quo? Things were going along just fine. And then I had a big, right? I dropped out of college. I got fired from my job. You have a big uh-oh or oh crap moment, right? So you go, oh, that was a total oh crap moment. So you look at that moment and then you say, okay, and then how did I get out of that moment into a new normal? What were the steps that I took? What were the things that I did? And so that's a really simple framework that you can use to say, oh, okay, well, I've got a story there. There's something that I can share there.
Gotcha. I found a quick link to, it was Kurt Vonnegut, his stories framework on YouTube. That'd be a good
one. Yes, that's a great one.
Perfect. I like to, every time I listen to a podcast, I'm trying to remember, I was like, Kurt Vonnegut, there's a million ways to spell that. I did a quick Google search and just want to confirm because I hear other podcast guests and they're just like, and they just roll over it. And I'm like, now I got to do 5 minutes of Googling. So I try and for the audience, just make sure that if I'm looking or if something new comes up, I'm throwing that in the link section and they can check out the show notes and really easily access that without any extra work.
Yeah. And he's got three other frameworks in that video that are really, really helpful.
Perfect. That's great. This looks like a fairly old video, him and a chalkboard.
It is old.
Sweet.
Some of the old stuff is the good stuff. Right. There are new ideas, only new people.
Cool. And very, very true. All right. So we're talking about stories. What are some ways, and we've got some great ways for discovering that you have stories and understanding them. What are some ways that people screw up the story side of things?
Okay. Number one, you share too much. And so let me tell you the ways that you can really quickly identify whether you or someone else is sharing too much. If you feel it, you are. So if you get that cringy feeling, like all of a sudden you've gotten way, way too vulnerable, chances are you were too vulnerable in that moment. Sometimes that plays to your favor. Sometimes it doesn't. I would argue more often than not, if you have overshared, if you have given graphic amount of detail around information that you have not processed or should not be processed in a public way, then you've gone too far. Second thing that people do that is not helpful is they go on and on and on with their stories. Your story doesn't have to be too terribly long to make an impact. So many times I will tell people to, if, you know, try to tell a story, you tell it, took you 5 minutes, try to tell it in 3 minutes the next time, try to tell it in 2 minutes, like crystallize it down to a couple of key lessons, especially if you're not using it on a big stage, if you're just using it in normal conversation. Mm-hmm. So we go on too long. We don't know our audience for a story. So it wouldn't do me any good to share a story about working as a speech language pathologist for this audience, because most people, it's not going to be the right frame of reference. I mean, I can mention that I do it, but I'm not going to launch into how I helped a patient, you know, swallow mashed potatoes. That's not helpful. So know who you're talking to. People also go into listing mode. So when you tell a story, you'll start like this. Well, Colin, it was 2017 and I started blah, 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 blah. And you'll recite a list of information, mm-hmm. like a chronological list. If you think about the greatest stories that you've heard, they do not start in chronological order. They start where the action is. So I lost my job. Da, 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 right? Start there, because that gets your attention. You're like, holy crap, she lost her job. Tell me more. What happened? Huh. Start where the action is.
Interesting. So is there a mini framework for like telling a good story? I've seen the hero's journey, but the hero's journey doesn't start with like, I lost my job. It starts with like, you know, Luke Skywalker meets Yoda or Obi-Wan Kenobi or something like that. But you're proposing to just jump right into the action and get right into it.
Well, I would say Luke Skywalker meeting Yoda is an action. So determine what the action is. So that's a pivotal moment in Luke's life. Gotcha. So start there. You do need all five components. So there's five things that you need for a great story. You got to have characters. You got to have a time and a place. You got to have obstacles. You got to have object of desire. And you've got to have suspense. How you put all of those together depends on the framework that you want to build. So back to the one that I told you about, status quo, then all the way down, right? So there's another one in Kurt Vonnegut's that starts with, I started all the way down. Like I started as Cinderella. I am like eating ash off the floor. How did I crawl my way up? That story will win you $1 million every time if you can get that one right.
Gotcha. Interesting. So there's these different starting points. I haven't seen any of the Kurt Vonnegut stuff, so I'm going to have to go check that out.
Good.
Sounds really interesting. Awesome.
Yeah.
So any other things that people screw up, you know, as we're recapping, you know, on talking about story, is there any other big ones that we've missed?
I mean, I would say oversharing is the number one. Over-detailing people to death is number two. Those are the big ones for me. Most people are pretty forgiving when it comes to a story. It's going on forever. I mean, we're getting ready for Thanksgiving. There's somebody in your family that's going to go on for 25 minutes. That's too much.
And if you don't know who it is, it might be you.
It might be you. Yes.
Because it's probably
record yourself at Thanksgiving.
Awesome. And so as we transition, we've talked a little bit about style. We've talked a little bit about the story. The last leg of the stool is the standards.
Yes.
And so help me understand what you mean by standards.
By standards, I mean your values on display. So your values in action. Do you say what you're going to do? Because at the end of the day, everything else, right? Everything else matters, but not nearly as much as this. So you can have a great story and you have great style, you know, all of those pieces. But if your standards don't hold, if I tell you I'm going to be timely, if I tell you I value timeliness and I hold that as a standard in my life, and I am late for every meeting that you and I have together, you're like, you are full of BS. Mm-hmm. Right. And so the exercise that I have people do with this is, what am I doing that shows my standards? I have them identify, what are the three most important things to you? Like right now, if I told you, what are the three most important things to you? You list those out. Mm-hmm. What are you doing that shows people that behavior? And what are you doing that conflicts with that? Every decision you make reflects your standards.
Gotcha. So it's almost like your standards, it doesn't sound like these, the standards are like a multiplier, but it's the, it's almost like a, the psychological principle of a hygiene factor, where if your standards, it can only be a detractor. So if you have good standards, then it's going to hold up the other two legs of the stool, and those are your sort of multipliers. But if you have bad standards, it's going to basically, or no standards, it's going to multiply everything by zero.
Yes.
Okay. And so, I mean, this one here feels like you document your sort of the values and then work towards living to them. Is it that easy?
It's that simple. It is that simple. It is not easy because we suffer from this condition called human. And so when we're tired and we don't want to, you know, so say a standard for you or something that you say, you know, I believe in following up. I'm going to follow up with someone, but you get home and you're exhausted. And it'd be really easy to just let that last three or four emails that you need to send or that phone call or that, you know what, Colin, I'm just not feeling it today for this podcast. Mm-hmm. Do you do what you say you're going to do? So it is simple, but not easy.
Gotcha. So the simple process is document them, write them down, live by them.
Live by them. Assess. Take a look. Did you live out today the things that were most important to you today? Mm-hmm. Did you do that? Because if you didn't, then something's off.
Yeah, I think I've heard a couple people doing sort of journaling for different reasons, whether it's mindfulness or I know there's a couple of people I've talked to that do it for stoicism. I haven't done it myself, but is this sort of what you're referring to? Is at the end of the day, sort of writing out, hey, did I, you know, here's write down some examples of how I lived to this value. Mm-hmm. Or even Absolutely. Not even writing them down, just sort of reflecting at the end of every day.
Whatever practice works for you. So if it's, I have clients that speak it into their voice memo. I have clients that write it. I have clients that have spreadsheets for it, right? It depends what's your personality type.
Daily score on how well I did.
Yes, exactly. I now I've come up with a pivot table or something crazy like that. Like somebody's done that.
For sure.
I like a more simple approach that says, here are the three things that I know are important to me. Did I hit these today? And if I didn't, why? What was the barrier? What stopped me from that? Right? Was I tired? Was I beaten down from a bad client meeting? What stopped me from that? And then what am I going to do next time so I can live within those? Because we're much happier when we live within those. Where we get discomfort is when we're not living up to the standard that we set for ourselves. That's uncomfortable. That feels bad. And that, you know, we exhibit all sorts of weird human behavior around that. So we're blaming other people for our own suckiness. We're hiding out in our basement, eating Cheetos, watching Netflix, whatever, pick your poison, pick the thing that you know that you do when you're avoiding the fact that you aren't living up to what you set yourself up for.
Interesting. My next question is, how does that impact somebody in a work scenario? But it's such an obvious one.
Yeah. Right. You know, that's the thing. There's nothing that I'm talking about today that you don't already know, or the people listening don't already know. You know, it's what are you going to do about it? Do you care enough? Like so think about it this way. The people that you love to follow as a leader already do all of these things. They have these standards, and that's why you like them so much, because they do exactly what they say that they're going to do. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh yeah, that's amazing. I want to be like that.
If you think of like the example of my head, at least being an entrepreneur, is the Bill Gates from 20 years ago versus the Bill Gates from today.
Yep.
And we don't have to comment on style, but he certainly has a style, and that's improved, and his story has certainly improved. But you look at his standards and him fighting against, no, I'm not a monopolist, versus, hey, I made all this money, I'm going to give it all away. Like,
yep.
I think that's one of the reasons why if you notice in the last, I don't know, 10 years, his popularity as a thought leader, as a human, has probably surged compared to, I remember growing up, you know, with Windows 3.1, Windows 95 was like the big launch when I was younger. And I remember everybody come 98 or 2000, everybody hated Bill Gates because Microsoft ran the world, or that was the opinion.
Yeah. So you get to decide. And then you get the simple joy of living it out. Live it out every day.
And so, you know, we talk about sort of reflecting on yourself and your story, but is there a good way to sort of assess yourself against the three sort of legs of the stool? Is it something we should be doing regularly? Is there a, you know, should we just sit down and like score ourselves once a week? Like what is the right sort of cadence to do this? And what is the right way? Or is there a right way?
So cadence depends on your personality. So I would look at this and say, am I the type of person who's going to make myself neurotic with this? Am I an overthinker who's going to sit down and overassess myself on this every day and drive myself crazy because I have those folks? I would say with fair regularity, once a week is sufficient to say, all right, looking back, where, you know, what did I do well? What didn't I do well? And where can I improve? I would also say the second thing that you need to do to assess yourself is have someone else take a look at you, at your actions, somebody that you trust, someone that you know that has your best interests at heart, and say, how am I coming off in these areas? Where are my blind spots? What is it that I'm doing that I'm missing? Because I know I'm missing something. So help me see, you know, am I showing up well in front of clients? Do I sound good? Do I look good? Do I carry myself with confidence? When I'm sharing stories, do they make sense? Are they appropriate for the audience that I have? And am I meeting all the standards that I profess? If I say family is important to me, am I getting home every night? Mm-hmm. If I say being on time is important to me, am I doing that? If I say treating the customer right, no matter what, is important to me, am I doing those things, or am I somehow undermining my own behavior and not realizing it? So those would be the two big things.
Cool. I love the sort of 360 element of not just of helping, getting some third party perspective to help you identify some blind spots.
Oh, for sure. We're not meant to do any of this alone. We need folks to help us.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. It's the hardest part to do is to actually go and solicit the third party feedback and to take it in genuinely. But has been the most impactful for me, at least.
Me too. All day long.
Still hate it. hate the moments of it.
You get the feedback sheet, you know, like after I don't know how you get yours, but I'll do a talk or something. You get all the feedback and you zero in on that one negative one and you're like,
Yeah, there's like 25 positives, but there's the one negative.
There's like, that one.
Well, that's it for me.
Dang it. Yeah. Is it true? Is it helpful? How am I going to use it? Those are the questions that help me.
Is it true? Is it helpful? How am I going to use it? Mm-hmm. I love it, Alex. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing. I feel like I learned a ton. Before we go, I want to get a chance. Normally we end on a cold call role play, but I thought just because you're not somebody, you know, you're an entrepreneur, but not somebody who typically would cold call, I thought we'd do more of an interested customer role play just to soften it up. I'll still find some objections here, but we'll start from there. And so set the context for me. Who am I? What's the scenario where you're meeting an interested customer?
Okay. So Colin, you are obviously a sales professional. You've been in your role for quite some time. You're looking to move on to the next level. However, in this case, you've gotten some negative feedback about how you're showing up, especially in front of your leadership team. And so you're questioning, what sorts of help and support do I need in order to be able to get in front of my leadership team and do a really bang up job?
Perfect. Get out of my head from like 10, 12 years ago.
Get out of your own way. Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. So I guess you're calling me.
I'm calling you, we're sitting down. We're sitting down and I'm saying, hey, Colin, how are you? It's great to meet you.
Good to meet you.
I'm really interested. I'm really interested in what brings you to me today. What is it? What's going on with you and work?
Well, I've been in sales for 6 or 7 years now, and I just feel like I'm not quite advancing. I'm not sure why.
Okay. So you're not advancing. You have no idea why. Talk to me more about what you're wanting to advance to.
I want to get into a leadership role. I hit my number. I do a little coaching, sort of voluntarily just for with other individuals on my team. But I never seem to get tapped for that, sales manager or sales leadership role.
Mm. So you're hitting all the right buttons, but nobody's coming to you saying, hey, you're my guy. And you're watching some other people go, are other people getting moved up? And I mean, are there spots for you to go?
I'd like to think so, but I've seen some people advance in front of me and hasn't felt good.
Absolutely not. I hear you on that. It's hard to watch other people and not compare.
Totally.
For sure. Tell me, I'm assuming you get reviews and things like that. You have mm-hmm. people who are giving you some feedback. What kind of feedback have you been getting about how you show up at work?
I've been told that I show up, I hit my number, and then, all the peripherals I'm not as enthusiastic about.
Mm, tell me about peripherals. What do you mean?
Like, being here on time, dressed in the same way as everybody, sort of in how I interact and engage with, maybe I'm a bit casual at the office.
Mm. Okay. Is that true? Is that accurate?
Yeah, probably.
Probably. You want to tell me more about that? Why is that the case?
I'm having a real time getting into the character and doing some of
yep.
this. Yeah. It's like, I can see you're leading me down a really good path, but I am just not a great actor.
So, we don't have to do this. It's sure. totally up to you. Because I'm laughing a little bit because I'm like, this feels super disingenuous. Because I mean, I don't know how to explain how people come to me other than they are like, let's go. I want to be amazing. Help me be better. Or they are crumbling because they have gotten crappy feedback.
There you go. Yeah. And I didn't really pick ahead of time, like which one it was. I was kind of, yeah. I'm trying to keep this web of like, I want to keep this interesting and valuable for Alex. At the same time of like trying to play the character and make all these decisions. And I just got to a point. I'm like, I don't know.
So are like, you in what? Your head, Colin? Are you in your head?
always, in a good way. I like to think. So talk to me just a little bit. Let's take a minute here. Talk to me about sure. some of the ways that you've helped salespeople in the past. Maybe is an easier way of finishing this.
Absolutely. And I would like a couple of really good examples. So I'll tie one to story because we talked about story and it can feel so nebulous. And I love this example. So Lisa was a gal that I worked with. She works for a huge healthcare company. She's a pretty high level executive and she had gotten feedback. So she operates a fairly large team. About 75% of them are remote. And so she's just a super high achieving woman, loads of stuff in the office all day long definitely hitting every mark for standards, right? Numbers are great, but the feedback that she had gotten as she was approaching, like moving on to the next level was, well, what your team is saying about you is that they don't feel like they know who you are and they don't feel genuinely connected to you. So they knew that they were a high achieving team and that they were hitting their marks and numbers. And that felt really great. But as the landscape of this particular department was changing, they felt unsteady because they didn't know who she was. And that's the feedback that she got. They're like, they know you, but they don't feel like they know you. Hmm. So we follow you because you get stuff done. And so Lisa and I spent some time together just talking about, well, what are different ways that you can connect with your team? We obviously talked about story and she's like, well, I don't have a story. And I said, really, Lisa, is that true? And she said, she's like, well, I don't know. I said, well, why don't you go home and think about it? And like, go back, look at your life, give me some hallmarks and big things that have happened in your life and come back and tell me again, if it's really true that you don't have a story. She came back for a next session and she had made on her own a vision board of her life with all of these different hallmarks. And on this vision board were all sorts of things like, oh, perhaps she was the first woman in her family to go to college. Maybe there's a connection point there, Lisa. She graduates from college. She gets a job on Wall Street. That's a big deal, right? I said, perhaps there's a connection point there with some of your high achievers. But the thing that got me most is there was a picture of the Twin Towers, 9/11. And she's like, oh yeah, well, I was on Wall Street at 9/11. And I lost a bunch of my friends and I had to cope with, you know, all of the stuff that was going on. And I looked at her point blank and I said, you tell me that you don't have a story that you could share with people about a time of struggle and how you managed through that. And maybe you have some steps or some great advice that you could give to these folks right now that would motivate them and feel inspired by you. And she looked at me and she's like, oh crap. So that's an example of leadership storytelling, of really parceling out, how she was showing up, other minor tweaks that we did to her. She had an office, again, high achieving woman, you know, nice, neat, tidy, all these things. One dusty picture of her kid. Mm-hmm. She had three children.
Yeah.
Perhaps people need to know that you are a human. show some of those things. So that's one example of some of the things that I have done with people from a sales perspective, working with folks on identifying the language that they're using that isn't helping them. So for example, I'm working with a guy and God bless him, he has to get in front of decision makers all the time. And mm-hmm. the first things out of his mouth are self-deprecating language. Well, I don't really know about this. And I don't know about this. And I don't know about that. And well, you know, I'm kind of dumb. And I look at him and I say, why are you talking like this? No one's going to have trust or have faith in you
mm-hmm.
if you don't trust or have faith in yourself. And it's leaking out every time you speak. So let's stop.
Love it. It's so obvious. And it's so easy to get in the habit of doing, of like announcing that you're new or announcing that it's a new program or announcing that it's, you know, that you don't really know what you're doing. It's like,
right. Announcing that you're young, announcing anything. Mm-hmm. Well, I've seen it in every possible combination with folks.
Yeah.
And the thing is, the other person across from you isn't necessarily thinking that or wondering that. And now you've planted that idea in their mind. And that's not helpful to you or to them. Because chances are you have something that's incredibly helpful. If you can shut that off for a little bit.
Perfect. Really nail, sort of brings it back to sort of the three legs of the stool.
Yep.
Awesome. Alex, thank you so much for coming on the show. If people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way?
So they can reach me. They can email me direct at alex@pswithalex.com. You know, feel free to check out my website at www.pswithalex.com. And then I'm on all the social media outlets. So LinkedIn is my primary, but you can find me on Facebook and on Instagram as well.
Perfect. Alex Perry, practically speaking.
Correct.
If you're trying to track her down on LinkedIn. Right on. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Alex.
Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it.